Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and then Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Monday morning, so that means my dad will call in and tell a jokey time. That's coming up a little bit later. And we're going to dive into the Monday morning movie reviews. And there really weren't that many movies that came out this week, so it's a little short. So we're going to also talk about, obviously, we'll get the thoughts of Colin and Eric on the passing of Jonathan Demme. And also, Eric put up a list on the Letterboxd website listing the movies that he is most looking forward to for the rest of the year. So I put a list of 15 movies together of the ones that I'm most excited about. So we'll talk about that as well. And we'll talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which begins on May 14th, and all of that cool stuff. So our phone number is 312-981-7200, and you can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show, and stay connected with us on Facebook. Best way to stay connected, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's welcome to the show Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
Welcome. Okay, so last week we lost a major talent, and I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about the great Jonathan Demme and some of our favorite works that he did. Colin, why don't we start off with you? I know he was one of your favorite directors of all time.
Yeah, I mean, this was this one really hurt. You know, I don't often. You know, when we've had a lot of celebrity deaths in the last, you know, couple of years, and I don't often have a lot to say about a lot of them, but this one, you know, this is one of those directors who was very important for my, you know, formative years as a film watcher.
Yeah.
You know, Stop Making Sense, Something Wild, Swimming to Cambodia, and Married to the Mob, that little block of films from the mid to late 80s really meant a lot to me. It was, you know, he was responsible for, you know, a big chunk of my CD collection, you know, Talking Heads, The Feelies, Sinead O'Connor, you know, how I discovered a lot of these bands was through him and these movies. And, you know, just the, you know, his style, you know, always jumped out at me. His, you know, love for his characters, you know, was very evident. And, you know, just the love and care for each project, you know, he brought it all. He never really phoned it in ever. And, you know, you never knew what you were going to get next with him. You know, it could be anything. It's such a varied career and sort of the template for other careers that would follow, you know, like Richard Linklater and Spike Lee and Steven Soderbergh, you know. These guys who just, you know, did, you know, one for me, one for them, you know, them being the studios, you know, so all the films were very personal. And it's just, yeah, it was a huge loss. Although I got to say, I can't say I was completely shocked when I heard the news, because I recently watched the documentary about Richard Linklater. That was on the that played at Sundance last year or 2 years ago, and it's on the Before Trilogy Criterion box set.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watched it, there's Demme was in it very briefly, you know, and he looked very, very thin, and he had a headscarf on. I'd never seen him look like that. It was kind of shocking. I was like, oh no, is he sick?
Yeah.
You know, is he the next to go? What's going on with Demme? So
I had no idea he was sick.
I really didn't either. But when I saw him in this documentary, I was like, I've never seen him look like this before.
Yeah.
Something's up.
So, yeah. Well, you know, I also wanted to mention really quickly. You know, we were talking about documentaries. He also made documentaries. He made obviously concert movies. Perhaps the best concert film ever made in Stop Making Sense ever. And he did a lot of work in television. You know, and he did a lot of great television. I mean, he directed two episodes of Enlightened that were both tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a major talent, man. And this is a big loss. Eric, what about you? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, what I've been telling people who have been asking me about him is that, you know, there are probably a few handful of directors that you can look at, you know, through, you know, your own prism that, you know, you're watching one of their movies. You know, I mean, Jonathan Demme had a very particular style. He, you know, the way he had characters look into the camera, and, you know, with the way he used music and stuff. And yet there was never a single film that was exactly the same as another one. You knew you were watching a Demme film, but every film was different. Every film was, it was tackling new genres. And you could just, like Colin said, you could tell that there was something he just wanted to explore with all these different movies. And, you know, I can't say that, you know, I had love for, I mean, I liked just about all of his movies. And I think with the exception of maybe Something Wild and maybe one other movie, you know, there was always a lot of, I really like this movie. I never quite got to full on love. I mean, I like Silence of the Lambs, obviously, more than you do. I think Rachel Getting Married is a very underappreciated film. And, you know, even though we're talking about Colossal now, might be my favorite Anne Hathaway performance. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you can't say that about a lot of directors, that you put it on and without knowing who made the movie, you could tell that was their guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I some of his work is I think astonishing. And it all starts with Melvin and Howard. The exploitation stuff that he did with Corman, you know, that's fun and fine, and that's how he got started. But something, you know, there was a total shift with Melvin and Howard, and that to me established what his style was. There was a real, like you mentioned, Colin, there's a real love for his characters, a real love of the common man. And just, you know, there's a joy in his filmmaking when it really works, when it's really great. The director's cut of Swing Shift. Have you guys seen the director's cut?
No,
I never have. And I'm gonna...
It's a different movie, Colin.
It's a different movie.
And it's a great film. And you know, that stretch that you mentioned, Colin, between Stop Making Sense and Married to the Mob, all amazing and all different kinds of stuff. And I'm glad you mentioned, Rachel Getting Married, 'cause that is a great film. And his last movie, the last movie that he did, was the Justin Timberlake concert movie, which was terrific. He worked, you know, he's on his IMDb. There is a credit for an episode of Shots Fired, which is a new TV series that he directed. And so he worked up until he passed away. And I do want to mention the two surprisingly good remakes that he made. He made a remake of Charade. What was it called? The Trouble with
Truth About Charlie.
Truth About Charlie. And then his Manchurian Candidate remake was really good too. So he did everything. And he was I met the guy a couple of times. You know, they came in to town in early 92 to pick up, you know, the slew of Chicago Film Critic Awards for Silence of the Lambs. And he couldn't have been a nicer guy. I mean, just one of the nicest guys ever. And I met him one other time too. And both times, everything that you would see, you know, in interviews with him, he was a genuine guy, a really good guy, and enormously talented. And you know, it's a real loss to the art of film. I mean, he was just one of the best. So
yeah, there's a story that I heard about when I was at Toronto just this last year, because that's where the Justin Timberlake documentary premiered.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there, seeing movie. There were pictures of him, so I had seen, you know, his what he was looking like, the way Colin described him.
Yeah, okay.
And I had heard some things, but there was a story that at the, like, I think it was the premiere of Moonlight, and he was in the audience for it.
Hmm.
And at the end of the movie, he got up to ask a question. He didn't announce himself, didn't do anything. He was just sitting there waving his arms like a fan,
yeah,
trying to get a question asked. And at the very end, he did. You know, and then got to ask this, you know, this beautiful question, and then met Barry Jenkins, and they, you know, embraced and hugged and all this stuff afterwards. So he, you know, right up, you know, there, he was, you know, he was just a fan, like you said, he was a lover of people.
Yeah, no question about it. Real, real huge loss, man. And his films have affected me deeply in many ways. So despite the fact of how I feel about Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, guys, hang on, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had to pay tribute to Jonathan Demme, who just passed away, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. When we come back, we've got some new movies to review. We are also going to talk about movies that we are looking forward to. We're almost halfway through the year. It's May 1st. Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. And so We're going to preview some of the stuff that we're looking forward to, the most anticipated movies for the rest of 2017. That's all coming up, as well as new movie reviews. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. And, yeah, we're here till 5 a.m. My dad is going to call in and tell a joke. Jokey time. We're going to do the aggravating SNL trivia game. That's where I give trivia questions about SNL to Dan and Esmeralda and get aggravated when they don't know the answers. And we have a whole bunch of leftover fun food topics. No pun intended, but we have a bunch of food topics we're going to get to. We love talking about food on the show. But right now it's time for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and more join me every Monday morning to take apart and review all the new movies. We have a short list this week. So we're going to, in addition to talk about the box office, we are also going to do a preview of the movies that we are most anticipating for the rest of the year. And here's Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin.
Hello.
All right. Eric, why don't we start off with The Circle?
Oh, okay. Well, this is the latest film from James Ponsell, directed Spectacular Now and Smash and the End of the Tour, based on Dave Edgar's novel. And this story, Emma Watson plays a girl who gets a job at this sort of high-tech kind of social media conglomerate that is known as The Circle. She gets kind of a entry-level customer service position, but it is kind of a big deal to someone who still lives at home, and her father has MS, played by Bill Paxton. Mm. And so she ends up going to this, you know, sort of this big Google-like conglomerate and begins working there. The CEO is played by Patton Oswalt, and sort of the one of the visionaries of this company is played by Tom Hanks. So through the course of her working there, it seems that it's there are very odd things going on. Things that it seems like, you know, everything is very much connected. This is Facebook on steroids. Is that everything? They want everyone to be a part of something. There's kennels and you know games and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's a big Silicon Valley type area, and they want everyone to stay connected, and they're actually sort of peeking throughout the globe, particularly within the country, in getting their hands and feet wet and hands dirty and involved with politics and things like that. And at one point during the story, she begins to what they call going fully transparent. And she agrees to wear a little camera on her person and sort of becomes like a real-life Truman Show, if you will. She everything she does is broadcast throughout the world. She becomes kind of an instant celebrity within the user circle, if you will. And it leads to some troubling things in regards to how we adapt to social media and how people respond to being a part of this, idealized world where everyone is connected in some way. So this film was not screened for critics, and which was very surprising considering the talent in front and behind the camera. There are a lot of people that have given this movie a negative response. I had a much different response to the film, though. The film does have a variety of problems, I agree. One of them involved two characters I haven't mentioned. One of them played by John Boyega, who is another part of the sort of the inner workings of the Circle, that they can't fully understand how to get him involved in the proceedings. They just basically have him have a couple of conversations with Emma Watson and then stare disapprovingly through everything else that's going on pretty much throughout the movie. And then there's another character played by Karen Gillan, who is a really good friend of Emma Watson's and sort of guides her in her early days through the Circle, but then basically spends the entire movie getting whiter and more Scottish for some reason. So there are things like that stand out and seemingly look like it's going to derail the movie, but it didn't for me. I found this movie to be wildly misadvertised. It's being advertised more of a, you know, a thriller. And, you know, 15 years ago, this movie would have been science fiction, pretty much. But it's not. And I think that because we're kind of there already with this material, that there's the assumption that it might seem dated in some way. But there are things about this movie that did not just disturb me, but I found actually quite funny. I think that this movie is working on a satiric level that a lot of people are just failing to recognize. I think there is some really interesting stuff about the sort of the fully realized liberal agenda that is just kind of goes overboard. There's another scene in the movie that I think doesn't quite work involving the term deer killer, but I think that escalates into something much more interesting and much scarier later on. There are a lot of things in this movie that made me laugh out loud. I think Tom Hanks is great in this movie. I think the casting of Tom Hanks as this guy that, you know, you seemingly trust everything he says, even though that, you know, in our movie minds, we know that there's something lurking underneath that we shouldn't be rooting for, but it's Tom Hanks, so we're kind of prone to do that. And I think he's got terrific moments throughout the movie and a very kind of subtle Tom Hanksian performance. Emma Watson at times might be a little too naive and innocent for her own good, but I think that kind of fits in with some of the themes of the movie. It's not a perfect movie, but I found myself laughing quite a bit at it. And by the end of it, I walked out just satisfied enough.
Okay. What about you, Colin?
Did not like this movie. Really, a lot. I did not like this movie. And what Eric pointed out about the satire, I do agree with. I think there are satirical ideas in this movie that are interesting and worth exploring, and are there. But they are brought down by the basic fundamentals of just some really, I think, some bad casting and some just bad filmmaking and or bad writing. We talk about the wealth of talent behind this thing. Yeah, it's definitely there. I mean, Dave Eggers and James Ponsoldt, you know, who's responsible for some really terrific films over the last few years, you know, Spectacular Now, The End of the Tour, Smashed. I mean, that's three home runs right there as far as I'm concerned. And yet I feel like he's almost out of his element here, or something got lost in the translation from book to screen, where everything is really overblown, melodramatic, and not really very well thought out. You know, Danny Elfman did the score for this thing. I think Danny Elfman's doing a really bad Trent Reznor imitation with this one, where it's trying for all these Social Network-like sequences, but they're just, they either alter the whole tone of this of a scene, or they're just underlining the quote-unquote importance of everything going on, and it's like a sledgehammer. I think Tom Hanks and Patton Oswalt are really miscast in this. I just do. I don't quite agree with what Eric's saying about, you know, the casting of Hanks in this one. It just didn't work for me. I didn't buy it. Emma Watson, you know, I'm a fan of Emma Watson, a big fan, and I hate to say it, but she is bad in this movie. I mean, it's a bad performance with like some really, and she's working with some really stilted dialogue. And the actors around her, you know, Ellery Coltrane is in this too, the guy from Boyhood. There are scenes between them where it feels like it's either, you know, misdirected or somebody stepped in from one of those faith-based movies and directed them and didn't know what to do. So I think this is a misfire on just about every front, you know, that I can think of. The technology that it's exploring, it's nothing new. I mean, a lot of things the movie is saying on the technology front and the paranoia idea and the idea of everybody being transparent, it's nothing new. I think we've heard it all before. It's not because it's contemporary, because we're past it. I mean, we're there right now, but we've been there for a while, in my point of view. I do think, though, there are some funny moments in the film, particularly when Emma Watson is transparent. People are putting in, the film is flooded with all these little messages that people are typing online, And some of the messages, I think, are really funny just because of how inappropriate they are or how silly they are. So some of that was pretty entertaining. So it's weird to me that a movie is more interesting in the comments section than it is on the screen. And as a thriller, didn't really know what it was being marketed as. I didn't see any trailers for it. But as a thriller, I mean, I'm 10 steps ahead of it the whole time. So for me, it's a huge misfire.
Okay. I didn't see it.
Okay. We're waiting for you to break the tie, Nick.
No. I read the book. I read the book, and the book's great. And I have I'm a little trepidatious now. You know what I mean? After hearing what you said, because the book is subtle and great, and Eggers. You know what I mean? It's so anyway. I just didn't see it. I didn't. For some reason, I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to go," and then I didn't, and I fell asleep.
I will say this: it does feature. I don't know if Eric mentioned this or not. It features one of the very last performances of Bill Paxton. And he is actually good in the film.
Okay. All right. All right.
Glenn Headley are good.
Yeah. Though they play her parents, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay. All right. You guys hang on. All right. We got more movies to talk about, a couple more movies to talk about. And we are also going to talk about the most anticipated movies for each of us throughout for the rest of 2017. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN as the Monday morning movie reviews continue. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and that also means it's the Monday morning movie reviews. So we'll get back to the movie reviews, and we're also going to talk about Colin and Eric and my movies that we are most anticipating for the rest of the year. And we welcome Eric back. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
All right, and Colin. Welcome, Colin.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about The Devil's Candy.
All right. Well, this is a horror film that starts out with the classic trope of a nice family, mom, dad, young teenage daughter, who buy a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere so they can get some extra space and where dad can work on his, you know, large canvas art. But we, the audience, know that this house was once owned by a very disturbed or inhabited by a very disturbed man who has murder in his past and whose parents no longer own the house. This guy is played by Pruitt Taylor Vince, and he's out there, not in this house, but he's out there in the world and listening to the voices in his head. And those voices start to penetrate the dad here, played by Ethan Embry. And suddenly those paintings of butterflies that he was hired to do for, you know, a bank or whatever, the paintings start to take on another life of their own. They're no longer butterflies. He has a loving relationship with his wife and daughter. His wife is played by Shuri Appleby. And him and his daughter, it's important to mention this, that their bond. They have a bond and a love for heavy metal.
Eventually, a certain kind of guitar becomes a very important plot point. And it's important to mention that bond because it's a bigger part of the story. You know, we're talking about Jonathan Demme and his love of characters. This movie really loves its characters. And it's essential for a horror movie to have characters that you care about. And right from the beginning, this movie gives us a couple of characters that we can't help but really like. And we like them because of this. Just this moment at the very beginning of the movie that it's like perfectly establishes the relationship between the father and the daughter, where they're in the car and they're enjoying this headbanging music, whatever band they're listening to, and the mom is just looking at them like, oh my God. But there's that great love between those two of them. And that's kind of is the central focus of the film. It's besides all the madness that is happening around them. And we don't really see that too often in a horror movie, but it was the thing that really stuck out to me about this one. On top of the fact that it is a really well-directed, well-crafted little piece of horror. You know, there are scenes in this movie that are very intense, much like last year's Don't Breathe. And the director, I don't have his name in front of me.
Sean Byrne. Sean Byrne.
That's right, Sean Byrne. Yeah. He is a very economical storyteller. This thing clocks in just under 80 minutes, and it's really tight. There's no fat here. There's nothing you could really cut out. And by the end of the movie, I was thrilled, and it was fun. And even though I saw something coming in terms of the conflict, I was so happy when I finally saw it. I was like, yes, that's what I wanted to happen. So I highly recommend this film.
Hello. All right. Eric, you, where did you see this one? You saw it at one of the festivals?
It premiered at the 2015 Toronto Film Festival.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah, it's been sitting around for a while, and I think it was one of the first couple midnight films I saw that that particular fest, mm-hmm. and it was an absolute standout.
Yeah, okay.
Sean Byrne, who had this is his first film since directing a movie that I saw at South by Southwest many years ago called The Loved Ones, that if you have not seen or even heard of The Loved Ones, seek it out. I don't think it's the easiest thing to find. But trust me, it's an Australian horror film. It's really fantastic, and he's followed up with this, which I agree with everything Colin said about this movie. I mean, the movie that opens with a guy who hears voices in his head that can only be drowned out by heavy metal music, and just following that up with, like Colin said, the relationship between the father and the daughter, and how the heavy metal music, this gap between, the good and the evil that, it sort of represents in the movie is really fantastic. And it doesn't just take the standard, guy hears, voices and he's going to be, the good dad becomes the bad dad, your Amityville Horror Syndrome kind of story, kind of tragic tale. A guy that actually kind of pushes back against it, trying to fight back against the these things that are trying to disrupt the family unit, and then it all comes down to a really great fiery climax. It's economical, as Colin said. I mean, everything Colin said, I could just repeat. It's the kind of movie it's great to see with an audience. Probably great to see at the Music Box Theater where it's playing right now. Sean Byrne is a real talent for horror, and someone needs to allow him to make more movies, because I'm completely down with this guy and just the two that he's made so far, including The Devil's Candy.
Okay. Hang on, you guys. We got to take a break here. Eric, hold on, and Colin, hold on. When we come back, we'll hear my review of The Devil's Candy. Colin was new to this one. Eric and I had already seen it. It debuted on the VOD a couple of months ago, and it's playing at the Music Box. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. So like us right now, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Coming up a little bit later on, we are going to talk about a bunch of food items and food topics that we have. We love talking about food on the show. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we'll do another edition of the aggravating SNL trivia game. That's all coming up. Right now, we are in the middle of reviewing movies here with Eric and Colin. We are also going to talk about our most anticipated films for 2017, the remainder of the year. But before the break, Colin told us all about this new horror film called The Devil's Candy. And Eric, welcome back. And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Yeah, I loved it, too. I thought it was great. And I'd love to see it in the theater. I watched it on my couch, But I thought it was great. Everything that you guys said, I echo 100%. I do want to mention again how much I love Pruitt Taylor Vince. I just love that guy. I've loved him forever. And he's so good in this, and creepy and awesome. And there's an Ethan Embry who is it started out as this this sort of clean cut guy, I can't hardly wait. And what were some of the other ones? He was in
That Thing You Do.
That's right.
Empire Records.
And he always played like this sort of dorky guy, but he's really kind of evolved. I mean, if you take a look at this. And cheap thrills.
Yeah,
he's on a path now. Also, he was in the Coscarelli, Masters of Horror. He was great in that, and so there is a path that this guy's taken. I find a much more interesting actor than he. And I always liked him. I always thought he was a very likable guy, but he's really good. And again, you mentioned this the family dynamic. I know that we were talking about the father and daughter relationship being really strong. But I thought the whole family dynamic is really strong in this movie and stronger than you would find in any other cliched things. Now, ultimately, it's been done, you know, but well, it's no, the heavy metal angle and the guitar thing has never been done before. I've never seen anything like that. But the whole family moving into house kind of haunted weirdness happens, you know, family dynamic changes has been done a million times, but never this originally and never with sort of as much energy. And I think it's great. And I think horror fans would be sad if they missed it. And it's called The Devil's Candy. It's still available. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on VOD. But I would recommend, if you want to check it out, go to the Music Box and see The Devil's Candy, which is a terrific, terrific movie and a great example of horror. So there you go. All right. Eric, tell us about How to Be a Latin Lover.
Okay. This film stars Eugenio Derbez, who I understand is a big star in Mexico. We had a film that went stateside a few years ago called Instructions Not Included, which I didn't see, but was actually quite a big hit for what it was here in the States. And now he's come back with this film, and in it, he plays a guy who, as a kid, watched his father, who was a truck driver, literally fall asleep on the job and crash his car straight through their house and watched him die. And that sort of awoke something in this young boy that he was going to do as little as he possibly could to work for a living, and decided to go about seducing older women in the hopes that, they'll marry him and he'll get their fortune when they eventually die. So that he does that. The first one he marries ends up living a lot longer than he had hoped. So now he is a middle-aged guy in his mid-40s. Instead of dying, she cheats on him with a car dealer played by Michael Cera. So this sends him packing out of the house, and he goes and moves back in with his sister, played by Salma Hayek, who also witnessed what happened to their father. She has a young son, kind of a dorky little, shy little kid, and he's got a crush on a girl at school. And her grandmother just happens to be a very wealthy older woman, played by Raquel Welch. So he begins using his nephew to show him the ropes in how to woo this young girl in his class, in the hopes that it'll get him closer to wooing Raquel Welch. Okay. I don't really have a lot to say about this movie, except that it's not very funny. The only time it's really funny, with the exception of maybe one laugh very early on, is whenever Rob Lowe is on screen. Rob Lowe just seems at this point that, and who would have guessed this so many years ago, that anytime Rob Lowe shows up, he's good for a pretty good amount of laughs. And that's pretty much the case anytime he's on screen. He plays his friend, who is also a gigolo himself, and basically doing exactly what he's doing, except he's doing it much funnier. There's not much to the relationship between him and his nephew. It doesn't really spin off into some sort of wacky Roger Dodger type scenario. Most of the advice is pretty lame. Most of the movie is pretty lame. Salma Hayek is pretty wasted in this movie. There's a lot of names that you'll see on a poster. Kristen Bell plays a yogurt shop worker who becomes a co-worker of his. Rob Riggle and Rob Hubel play two spiteful salesmen that he runs afoul of and are basically chasing him throughout the rest of the movie. I mentioned Michael Cera already. None of these guys can do much to lift this material. It's pretty standard stuff. Eugenio Derbez is basically, this generation's Francis Weber, I guess. And that's pretty much all I have to say about this film.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. I'll tell you what I thought of it. That's the How to Be a Latin Lover. And we will talk more about the movie. You'll get my review of it. And we'll also take a look at the movies that we're most anticipating for the rest of 2017. So there you go. That's coming out. That's coming up after the break here. Hey, good morning. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews are continuing. We're going to be talking about some food stuff a little bit later on. My dad will call in and tell a joke. We have the aggravating SNL trivia game. And right now we're in the middle of the movie reviews. Eric just told us about How to Be a Latin Lover, and he didn't like it. And Colin, you didn't see it, correct?
I did not see it.
Okay. All right. I liked it more than you did, Eric. I don't think it's perfect, but there are laughs in it. I actually think the lead guy is funny. It's the, you didn't see Instructions Not Included, Eric?
No.
It's the sort of the same dynamic. It's him dealing with little kid.
You know what I mean? Surprise me.
It's the same. It is. I mean, that's like his cash cow thing. I think. I think it's like, oh look, inappropriate guy, older guy, coaching kid in inappropriate ways. Because that's what Instructions Not Included was kind of about anyway. So it's the same dynamic. However, I think, you know, as basic as this movie is, and as corny as it is sometimes, and you know, sporadically funny here and there, there are laughs in it. And I agree with you that Selma Hayek doesn't have much to do in the movie at all. She slaps him in the head a bunch of times, and then they do like a salsa dance together. Rob Lowe's very funny in it. I agree. I think Kristen Bell is very funny. I love the idea that with each scene that progresses, she has more wounds on her body because she lives with like 50 cats.
Cats, the cat joke, yeah.
I thought it was funny. I thought every time that she had more Band-Aids, and I thought it made me laugh. Michael Cera's only in the movie for a short time. I thought he was funny. I cracked up. I thought the two Robs were hilarious. I thought their stuff was really funny. Clearly improvised, you know. Because the guy who directed this is an actor who has directed a bunch of children's hospitals, which explains why all these guys are in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's directed a bunch of that TV stuff, a bunch of Funny or Die stuff. So that explains why, you know, he was able to get some really, really talented and really funny people in it. There are things that I laughed at out loud. There is a couple of sight gags involving a guy in a wheelchair that cracked me up. There is Michaela Watkins is in this movie, too. And you probably don't remember, Eric, but she's got one line in the movie. I won't give it away, but she's got one line in the movie. I was laughing for 5 minutes after she said the line. And it's a line that involves her and about caring for children,
yes,
which I just thought was the funniest. I mean, that's the hardest I laughed the entire movie was this throwaway line that Michaela Watkins has in it. The crowd I saw it with loved it, and it was packed, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a lot of money over the weekend.
It did.
And but the audience that I saw it with enjoyed themselves. It's a throwaway movie. It's not going to change the world or anything. I laughed, you know, I didn't laugh a ton, but I laughed enough to say, yeah, you know what? If you can kill an hour and a half more than, well, it's longer than an hour and a half, about 2 hours. And everybody in the theater seemed to enjoy it. And when it was over, you know, oh, look, there's wacky you know, bloopers at the end, and they're all dancing down the street and all that crazy stuff. And if you're not too demanding, you could do a lot worse than this. And I think because they assembled some really funny people, even if they do only have small amounts of screen time, that adds, I think, a lot to the movie. You know, the climax is really stupid, and the message at the end is also kind of offensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it was nice to see Linda Lavin on screen, even though she, you know, has a very strange role, which isn't necessarily very funny, but I love Linda Lavin, and it was great to see her. The bit with Raquel Welch in her arms is terrible and not
yep.
funny. But I thought, you know, there are enough laughs in this movie to slightly recommend it. And, you know, everybody in the theater I saw it with, we all kind of had a good time. When it was over, I forgot about it. And that's pretty much it. So, all right, we'll talk box office in a little bit, but it made a lot of money over there. I mean, was that a big surprise, Eric?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
We'll get into it a little bit more, but yeah.
Okay. Because I never expected it. I mean, when we got there to the theater, we saw it at like 4:30 on Saturday afternoon. My parents
mm-hmm.
and I packed. I was like, what? I was really surprised at how many people were there. So anyway, I'm kind of recommending it. I thought it was fine. Eric, what do we got next week? Just Guardians, right?
It's Guardians.
Yeah.
It's just Guardians.
Yeah, just Guardians comes out next week, so everything else is just going to be forgotten. Listen, real quick before we break here, Eric, tell everybody how they can get tickets and passes for the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is May 14th through the 18th?
May 12th to the
12th through the 18th, right. May 12th through the 18th. Tell everybody how they can get tickets.
Yeah, go to either ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com or just go straight to the MusicBoxTheater.com website. Tickets are available for all the individual films, and a pass gets you for $150. You get 23 features, a couple repeats, and two great shorts programs put on by Colin.
Right.
So you can come see 10 movies, and you'll end up paying $150. Just for that, with all the great guests we're going to have. If you just buy the pass, it's going to be a pretty spectacular time.
Right. And who are some of the guests? Tell everybody who are some of the guests that are going to be there.
Our opening night guests, we're going to have Aubrey Plaza and Kate McCucci there with the director, Jake Baina, for the film Little Hours. The actor, now director, John Carroll Lynch is going to be there Saturday night with Lucky. Richard Kelly is going to be there Saturday night as well for a 35mm retrospective screening of Southland Tales.
Yeah.
Brett Haley, who directed the film I'll See You in My Dreams, his new film The Hero, he's going to be there Sunday. You mentioned Cheap Thrills earlier. Pat Healy is going to be there Monday night. Tuesday night, we're going to have the essayist, now director, Coconata, with his really great film, Columbus, with John Cho and Haley Lou Richardson. Wednesday night is the Noah Wells double feature night with the incredible Jessica James and the film that she directed, Mr. Roosevelt. Jessica James director Jim Strauss is also going to be there Wednesday night, and then Thursday we're closing with a ghost story.
Right.
So that's all you need.
And then Colin, your shorts, you have two programs, and they run on Saturday and Sunday, correct?
Yeah, Saturday at 1 o'clock, Sunday at 2:15.
And you can get go ahead.
And just confirmed, Mark Borchardt of American Movie will be there.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
Come on out, everybody.
Come on out. All right. Go to the Music Box website or ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. Get your passes and get your tickets, and it's going to be a great time. All right, guys. Hang on. When we come back, we are going to talk about – are you guys all ready? Colin, you all ready to talk about your anticipated movies?
Yeah, I got a random list here.
Okay. I got a list of 15. I'm looking forward to. We'll get to those. All right, guys, hang on, all right? Okay, we got to take a break here for the news. And when we come back, we will jump right into the most anticipated 2017 releases for the three of us on the WGN. We'll take a break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. For your morning drive. And we're in the middle of our movie reviews. We finished up the movie reviews. And then now we're going to jump into, because Eric Childress made a list on in the Letterboxd webpage with his most anticipated films for the rest of 2017. So we thought we would jump into that and preview some of the things that we're looking forward to. But let's start off with, I got your list in front of me, Eric, and I've got my list in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off with... Let's go with we'll start from 15, Eric. We'll do your list, then we'll do Colin's list, then we'll do my list, and then we'll talk about them.
Okay, yeah. These are just I did kind of put these in order and just most anticipated.
Yeah, I did too. From 15 to 1. Number one being my most anticipated. Yeah,
my 15 is Baywatch, which I don't know. It looks funny to me.
It does look funny.
Yeah. 14 is a film called The Current War, which is about the Thomas Edison Tesla battle, historical story. 13 is Stephen King's It, which is a great trailer.
Yeah.
12 is Sofia Coppola's remake of the Clint Eastwood's The Beguiled.
Mm-hmm.
Number 11 is Battle of the Sexes with Steve Carell and Emma Stone. 10 is Thor Ragnarok. I have all the faith in the world in Taika Waititi. Number 9, I just moved up because of the great advanced buzz that just got out of the Overlook Film Festival. It comes at night.
Great trailer.
The latest from Trey Edward Schultz, the horror film.
Yeah, great trailer.
Mm-hmm. Number 8 is Darren Aronofsky's Mother with Jennifer Lawrence, which is also a horror film from what I understand. Number 7, War of the Planet of the Apes. 6, Blade Runner 2049. 5, Alexander Payne's Downsizing, just because it's Alexander Payne. Number 4, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. 3, The Post, Steven Spielberg's story of the Pentagon Papers with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. Two, Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk, and of course, number one, Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Okay. All right. We'll bat those titles around a little bit more. Let's get Colin in here. Colin, do you have a list there?
I have a list. It's not ranked. I just looked at Eric's, and then I found another list on Letterboxd that was kind of similar and just kind of looked for titles that weren't on his list that also sounded interesting. So these aren't in any particular order, but Pixar's Coco looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Two movies that Eric had already talked about from Sundance, Baby Driver and The Disaster Artist, The Making of the Room, which, should be obvious. a movie by Duncan Jones called Mute. Just because Duncan, a lot of these I wrote down because, that's a good director. I know nothing about him. I mean, I know nothing about these films, but they got good, good casts. Mute sounds interesting. Duncan Jones has a mostly good track record. The Life and Death of John F. Doonan. This is from the director of Mommy. Which is a crazy movie from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So by that basis alone, I'm looking forward to this. Alex Garland, the director of Ex Machina, has a new movie called Annihilation. That sounds pretty interesting. It's got Natalie Portman and Jennifer Jason Leigh, and again, Oscar Isaac is in it. A movie called Okja, directed by Bong Joon-ho, who directed The Host and Snowpiercer. And this sounds like a crazy movie, too. And it's got Tilda Swinton and Jake Gyllenhaal and Paul Dano in it. Bride of the Immortal. This is a new Takashi Miike film, the director of Audition and The Great Yokai War. And this guy's kind of all over the place, but this one is premiering at the Cannes Film Festival. So, maybe there's something to it. A movie called Wonder, directed by Steven Chbosky, who directed Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious about this one because the book has become very popular, especially, at the school that I work at. And it's based on a story, very loosely based on, a kid I used to know who has facial deformity. So I'm very curious how this one goes. We got a movie called Futile and Stupid Gesture, directed by David Wayne. It's a documentary about Douglas Kinney, the great National Lampoon writer. I'm sold already.
I talked with Tony Hedro about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was happy with the script, okay? I will say he was happy with the script, and he thought it was, in good hands. I mean, David Wayne and everything.
Yeah.
But he was a little concerned about the guy who's playing him.
Oh.
In the movie, because it's the guy, I don't remember his name. It's Rebel Wilson's brother in Bridesmaids.
Oh, yeah. That HBO show.
Yeah, that guy. And Tony Hedger's like, I've never weighed that much in my entire life. And especially at the time when I was working on Lampoon. So I found that really, I thought that was pretty funny. But he read the script. He feels pretty confident about it, which is a good thing. If Tony Hedger says so,
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then we got a couple movies. We got a movie from Michael Haneke and, another movie from Roman Polanski. And those could go either way, but, I'm always curious. So.
All right.
So, yeah, that's my list.
Okay. Let me fly through mine, and then we can talk about some of the ones that we have in common. I'll go from 15 up. 15 is A Ghost Story, which I hear nothing but great things about. 14 is Battle of the Sexes, which you mentioned already, Eric. And I also wanted to mention that there was a really terrific HBO movie with Holly Hunter and Ron Silver.
It was actually an ABC movie.
Oh, was it ABC? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, it was good.
It was good.
Real good. But you know what? You look at this cast, these two playing. For people who don't know, it's Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. In the early 70s, they had this Battle of the Sexes tennis match. And it was a huge thing if you were around then. Huge. 13, I know you guys are just going to be thinking I'm nuts, but Captain Underpants. I happen to love those books. And I think they're great, and I'm looking forward to it. 12 is Mother. 11 is Atomic Blonde. 10, Blade Runner 2049. 9 is Dunkirk. 8 is The Beguiled, which has an amazing trailer. 7 is The Disaster Artist. 6 is Baby Driver. 5, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. 4, Downsizing. 3, War for the Planet of the Apes. 2, Detroit. about the Detroit riots, directed by Kathryn Bigelow. And then number one is the Paul Thomas Anderson movie that doesn't have a title yet, with his reunion with Daniel Day-Lewis. So that's my big, even though it's about fashion, I know, but that's the one that I'm looking forward to the most. And if, I'm looking forward to the Star Wars movie, but just not as much as you guys. So what, you know, what are the more interesting ones that, like, so this Blade Runner 2049, Eric, you're looking forward to it despite the fact that you don't like the director.
Yeah, it really is a yin and yang kind of thing, because I like the trailer. There's a part of me is like, cool, another Blade Runner movie. The other part of me is like, dude, just leave it alone. And especially you, Dennis, you stay away from it. So I'm just I'm torn so many different ways on that movie, and yeah. I hope that it's the movie of his that I finally like.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, we kind of had, you know, it's kind of three different lists there. You know, there were a couple titles that popped up that I've already seen. So obviously they didn't make my list.
Right.
Baby Driver and Ghost Story.
Right.
And the Detroit just recently popped up on the schedule. My list was initially based on films that had release dates. So like the Paul Thomas Anderson movie wasn't on the schedule yet. And some of these movies that are like at Cannes and things like that weren't on the schedule yet.
Okay.
But all sound very interesting to me.
Okay. Colin, some of the big ones that both Eric and I mentioned, anything you're looking for? I mean, obviously Star Wars.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel stupid for not mentioning Ghost Story because it's our closing night film at the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
That's right.
And I hear nothing but amazing things about it. So of course that's on my list. Very high.
Okay.
Dunkirk, anytime, anything Christopher Nolan puts out, you know, and he's still sticking with film. He's still sticking with 70mm. So hopefully,
it's a one word title, which is a good sign.
Right? Yeah.
So I like it more if it was called In Dunkirk, though, Nick.
What?
You'd like it more if it was called In Dunkirk.
Got to have the IN at the beginning. Yeah.
Right. So hopefully we'll get to see that in 70mm at some point as well.
Yeah.
And then of this, the big franchises of the summer, War of the Planet of the Apes. This franchise is on fire, so I'm, that's my big franchise anticipation for the summer.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
All right, well, very, 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 very cool. Okay, Colin, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty.
Okay, buddy, there you go. And Eric, you hang on, okay?
Okay.
Come back, talk box office with Eric Childress right after we take a break here for weather and traffic right here on WGN. I got the weather for you. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning, that means my dad will call in and tell a jokey time. We got some fun food topics to talk about, and we'll have another edition of the aggravating SNL trivia game, where I, who knows everything about SNL, quiz Dan and Esmeralda, who don't. That's coming up in a little bit. But we just finished talking about the new movies that we were looking forward to, and the Chicago Critic Film Festival, which you need to check out and get your pass. But we'll bring Eric back now because we're going to talk about box office. All right, Eric, I got the box office in front of me.
Yeah.
Not a surprise, Fate of the Furious, mm-hmm. 19.3 million, bringing its total up to 192 million, over 192 million. Expected drop off?
Yeah, pretty much. I think there was some optimism that it might be over 20 million this weekend. I kind of have it figured for like 18, 19 million. Even though, again, it seems like it's kind of peaked here in the U.S. It's obviously a far cry from what Furious 7 did. The international numbers on this movie are insane. They're absolutely insane. It is at $1.06 billion worldwide. It has made $867 million overseas, which is the 10th most ever.
That's unbelievable.
It's about to pass Frozen, for God's sakes.
Oh, man.
Okay? So this thing's a monster, and as long as it keeps doing that overseas, we'll see 11, 12, 13, 14.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible. All right.
Yeah.
Number two, and I'm surprised, How to Be a Latin Lover made $12 million over the weekend. And I can tell you, it was packed when I saw it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a surprise mainly, like we said earlier, Instructions Not Included, opened like Labor Day weekend a few years ago. And, you know, just kind of end of the summer, beginning of fall, you know, there's not a lot to see. So people, you know, for some, you know, the movie got attention, made like $44 million in its run. And this one, they only opened this film on like 1,100 theaters. You know, so that's why a number such as 12 million, which is what's being reported right now, is really huge. I mean, that's a per screen average of over $10,000 per screen, which is pretty massive for a film released on such a small screen count. So, I mean, this is a this guy's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, you know, and I have to say that not surprisingly, it seemed that there were the theater was mostly populated with Latin people,
mm-hmm.
In the theater, and you know, they showed a trailer beforehand for a movie called The Three Idiots.
I don't even know what that is.
And the trailer was all in Spanish.
Oh wow!
The entire trailer, the title of the movie was Three Idiotas.
Okay.
Tres Idiotas, and the audience was just like I think the audience recognized some of the people in the movie. So there's.
Did you catch the was it the Lionsgate, the Pantaleone? Studios that's released,
yeah.
The same ones that released Latin Lover.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing sometimes, you know, we talk about, you know, not just indie films, but people are just like, why don't they make more movies like this? Why don't they make more movies, you know, for me and stuff like that? It's amazing what can happen if you actually release a movie, you know?
If you release a movie, you know,
tries to do these platform releases or they go like, no one's going to see it, and they dump it on five screens and then you never hear from it again. But, you know, it's amazing. And I know that you have to have not just cooperation with the studios, but, you know, you have to the theaters have some sort of market research, too, that says these films are going to pack in my theater.
Right.
So that they'll get it booked. Clearly it's happening.
What's interesting is that the number two and number three slots are specifically aimed at a certain audience.
Yes.
And they both made a lot of money over the weekend.
Yes.
And the next one is, I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Yeah,
Bahubali 2, The Conclusion, which is an Indian film, which made over $10 million, and it's on 11 screens in the city.
Yeah, I mean, the first film was a couple years ago, and it did something like $6.7 million total. And, you know, and these Bollywood films, you know, I mean, the theaters in Chicago have been releasing, a lot of the AMC films will release these theaters.
Yeah.
They don't screen for critics or anything like that, but they get out there. And if you go to those theaters, there are usually huge lines.
Yeah.
For those films.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I mean, it's really kind of curious that, you know, I mentioned the you know, Instructions was released over Labor Day weekend. And here you have these two movies that are released at, you know, sort of which is primarily a dumping ground for studios.
Yeah.
I mean, it was The Circle and these two movies. And I wasn't even aware of this Bollywood film.
I wasn't aware of it either. Right.
I mean, I think I had seen it in like a limited release schedule somewhere. But I didn't even know it opened around here or anything like that. And it's only at 425 screens. It's a 23,000 per screen average.
Yeah.
Number three at the box office.
It's insane. I mean, it's really telling that, like, How to Be a Latin Lover and this Bollywood movie beat a Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah.
It made more money than a Tom Hanks and an Emma Watson
movie.
Who is currently in the biggest movie ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And The Circle only made $9.3 million, but I don't think it was expected to make a lot of money, was it?
No, I don't think so. I had it kind of in like $11 million initially, and then, you know, I expected maybe to come in a little bit less after the reviews hit. But, yeah, I don't think they're expecting anything big. It's only like an $18 million budgeted film,
So
it's not going to be a huge loss. And this was a pickup, too, because it was originally going to be released by EuropaCorps, which, you know, they had released only a couple movies in their short run, and then basically STX picked this thing up.
Mm.
But I think STX, you know, I know you haven't seen the movie yet, but whether you think it's good or bad, I think they did a real disservice to the film by, one, advertising it the way they did, and, two, making a spectacle out of not screening it for critics.
Yeah, it was weird.
It is weird. It's just, I think the writing's on the wall. People know when that happens, and even more so now that once we become aware of that, it's all over the place. People write stories about it. There's social media going on.
Yeah.
So people know in advance, you know, you're trying to hide reviews, but you're getting bad press anyway.
Yeah.
So just screen the thing.
Yeah. All right, Eric. Thanks a lot, man. And we'll talk to you next week with Guardians.
Sounds good.
Okay, man. Take care. Eric Childress, you can read him at movies.com, and he's here with us every week. And make sure you get your tickets and your pass for the Chicago Critics Film Festival.